and being a female only hostel. We really want to have that community of female travelers that are just, you know, communicating with each other, doing assistance with each other. We are doing a lot of effort to, you know, create a community and to do events. So you see that people are really like searching for connection right now.
Welcome to The Turndown. I can't wait for you to meet Bianca. Bianca is one of the most energetic, most fun, most, spirited hosteliers, entrepreneurs, developers, if you will, of hostel inventory. She started at zero and has developed a very unique portfolio of properties spanning across Europe. She has fantastic stories. She has fantastic examples, things that worked well and things that maybe caused her to have sleepless nights. So with that, I really don't want to get between you discovering Bianca, her life, her product, her portfolio, her accomplishments, but also, you know, some of the best practices that she would like to share with fellow entrepreneurs on what to avoid and, you know, maybe what she's learned from her journey as a developer of hostels around the world. With that, let's get right into it. Bianca, welcome to The Turndown. It's a pleasure to welcome you. Thank you so much for lending me your time and lending us your insights, your experience. Let's start by kicking it off. I'd love for the audience to discover your product, your solution, your, accommodation in Amsterdam, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, among others. So I'm just introducing myself. My name is Bianca Breslor. I'm the founder and CEO of Hostella. Hostella is a female-only hostel. And I have branches in Amsterdam where I started in 2012. And last year I opened in Barcelona. And this year I opened in London.
Congratulations. So
thank you so much. And thank you for having me, by the way.
Absolutely. So having recently opened two additional branches, to yes. The typical question, what is keeping you up at night? I'm sure you must have some answers.
Yes, I have a lot. So what's been keeping me up lately is that I had to find a new manager in Amsterdam. And it's really hard in Amsterdam to find good staff. I think you have it in the major cities that staff is one of the things that is really hard to find after COVID. You saw that a lot of people, were doing other things. So it's really hard to get people into hospitality again. And so I was looking for a really long time. And that meant that I put my other projects on hold because I was also busy with branching out into other European cities. So that meant I had to go back into the field. And that was, in the beginning, it was kind of hard because you're not used to it anymore as a CEO, being a manager on the floor again. But I quite enjoyed it. It was nice to have interaction with staff and with guests again, and really to be on the floor and see how it goes and what's needed. So I really enjoyed my time back on the floor. Again,
that's amazing.
Yeah, so that was one of the things, and the other one is more of my role as a CEO now that my I'm branching out. I have three hostels now, and there comes a point where I'm wondering, like, am I the right one, still the right one to be the CEO, and do I have enough time and attention to give to all the branches? So that is what I'm wrestling with at this moment.
Okay, super interesting. And I want to double click on that. But before we do, I'd love to sort of rewind the clock a little bit and start with, how did you get started? How did you said in 2012 you opened your first hostel.
Yes.
How did you come up with the idea? And what got you to become a hostel owner, operator, or, you know, CEO to begin with?
Well, like they say on TikTok, delusion. it's delusion. It's because I was working in marketing And I was kind of a job hopper. I never had the feeling that I wanted to stay in a job for a long time. I was quickly bored with the tasks and also with the people. It was like the setting in an, a really small setting that I didn't really enjoy. And at one moment, a friend of mine had a bed and breakfast. And it was kind of a high-class bed and breakfast. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is with people. And it was creative. And I said, I want to do something in hospitality. And then my then husband said, bed and breakfast is pretty small. It's only two rooms in Amsterdam. So why don't you do a hostel? And then I was like, okay, we can do a hostel. But I want a good concept because I was in marketing and I love like really original and good concepts. So I just went Googling and looking for all kinds of different hostel type concepts. And then I think I stumbled in Asia on female only hostels. And I thought, well, that's not here yet. So I started developing it. I started talking to a lot of people, talking to the city, to the municipality of Amsterdam about how to start a hostel, and also did my research online with all the permits that I needed. So I just, and I stopped my job and I went freelancing just to have more time to see what I need to start a hostel. And it just went from there.
And then you opened in 2012. How big was the hostel that you opened?
The first one was 84 beds.
Okay.
And it was in an old office building, and they wanted to do something different. They wanted to have all kinds of little businesses in. And I just went to them and I was like, I have a great concept and I want to do it here. And I even got a price. I was looking at my old contract. I paid like €4,500 for the whole
the
property.
I
was negotiating really well. And I did everything on budget. I had like everything thrifted, secondhand furniture, except for the beds. And I was my own contractor. I just hired an electrician and a plumber, and I was coordinating everything. And it was just pure, I could do this. Delusion, just going to sit there and do your research.
So you have a business plan, right?
You
have a location, which is great.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You hire a team, right, including yourself. How long did that then take for you to welcome the first guest?
3 months. And I totally stripped it. That's, you know what? And I think a lot of people have it. If you have it in your own hand, I know what I can do. And I know if I'm a really good project manager, a really good project. So I can, if I can coordinate everybody, it is not that long. My later projects like London and Barcelona, way much longer because I had a contractor. And a contractor, it's not his first priority to finish fast. Let's see. Mm-hmm.
Spend as much money as possible.
Stay as long as you can on the project, spend as much money. And if it takes like a year, that's what it takes. So,
well, you must have had fun stories from the opening days. I mean, like, is there anything that comes to mind where you're like, I don't know, chaos broke out, or the reverse, that you were welcoming the first guest and you just were in complete awe that you're on the right track? Help me understand sort of what was the sentiment in that sort of first 6 months opening?
Was for the first one or
the first one? The first one.
Well, I just remember because I was in a building with like other entrepreneurs, and one of them came up and he said, "You're open." I said, "Yeah, I'm finished." And I didn't. So we didn't have cloud beds yet. So that's a little hook. It was just like by hand, and my husband was like a business analyst, so he had like an Excel sheet that we worked on. So it was kind of like figuring things out and seeing how it went. And like my husband and I, we did in, I think the first 2 weeks, we did all the shifts, like by ourselves. And we had a daughter as well. So it was just like seeing how it goes, figuring it out. And he came up, like, I think we are really long with CloudBest. He was like, yeah, we need a system. We need a PMS system. So and then it went from there. And it was even this bad because Booking didn't even accept me because I was female-only hostel and they don't discriminate. So they said, we're not going to accept you. So we only had Hostel World. Yeah, we only had Hostel World. And even alone with Hostel World, it went well. But
are you now on Booking.com? Have they changed their mind?
Yeah, I just, because I called them again, I said, you have to come. You have to accept me. And then it came and it was a really nice account manager. She was like, yeah, this is cool. But I had to fight for like the basic things because everything was so new and they didn't know what a female hostel was.
Yeah. Help me understand how you made the decision on decor, on design. Like, did you just do what you liked, or because you're starting with the white canvas, this is an office building, right? You could paint whatever you want. Like, help me understand what inspired you.
So I love thrifting. So I love mixing like old and new. I love really furniture with a story. So, and basically I'm always on a small budget because I'm financing, I'm my own financer. So I'm always, but it's always tight. So I don't have budgets to go like, you know what, give me that one chair was 800 euros. Let's do that. So I'm also looking for creative ways to like fix furniture or paint them or have like a cheap solution. So it's just mix and match. And the thing is, because in the beginning, you're so long with the construction and that always like takes longer than you think. And then in the end, it's just like, just throw some chairs in.
Yeah.
Let's open because we have to open. But now I really hired a designer because I want a more cohesive design for all the hostels. So now I have more time and like focus for design. But in the beginning, it just was like, oh, you want a free couch? Oh, here's a free couch. These are a couple of chairs I got from the thrift shop. So it was more like that.
Now
but still mix and match with my idea.
Yeah, now you seem to be creating a brand, right? Like you're...
Yeah, and it wasn't even the plan. It was the plan to do one house. I just wanted to be a hostel owner. And then after that, I thought I wanted to do like other concepts. But so I had like a coffee shop where I sold stroopwafels and coffee. But quickly I noticed like, oh, this is not for me. I don't want to be in a shop all day or having to deal with, you know, shop problems. I just want to set it up, put everything in place, and then be at a distance as a distant CEO, just as a counselor. So at one moment, I decided to branch out into Europe. And I was like, I want London, Paris, Barcelona, Berlin. I wanted the five biggest cities in Europe. And I've added New York as well. I really want to do New York. And I'm busy with Paris, so let's wait and see. Paris is gonna be. And it's just like in the beginning, it's delusion. It's just like, this is what I want, and I'm just gonna figure out what it takes to get there.
That's fantastic. And you alluded to the fact that you opened your first properties almost, was it during the pandemic or right after the pandemic? Is that true?
Like it was during.
Yeah.
It was true.
You picked the crazy time to expand.
I didn't do it on purpose. So Barcelona, it had a really long time to get permits. Everything of Spain, everything takes really long in Spain. So I finally started in January 2020. And then busy with the construction. And it was big construction. And then COVID hit. And I did have money for Barcelona, but when COVID hit, everything dried up. So I didn't have money anymore to finish it. I was definitely looking for finance and investors, but nobody wanted to do hotel. So I just stopped for a year. I just closed it off. It was 80% finished.
Oh, that must have been heartbreaking.
It was because I was trying to sell it. I was trying to finish it. I didn't have money to finish it. I have a lot of money already put into it. So I couldn't leave it. I couldn't sell it. So I just remembered waking up one day in June and thinking like, I am so
Okay. But how do you come out of that hole? Like you realize you're screwed or whatever the expression you want to use.
Yeah.
How do you get out of that hole?
So what happened? So I kept myself busy. I was always looking for solutions, and you know, I was talking to everybody on LinkedIn that was in a hotel business. And looking for advice, talking to real estate people. And at one point, so I was already closed for a year. And at one point, I visited a hostel, I think in Barcelona. And it was done IKEA style. Because everybody knows IKEA is not meant for... It's good, but, you know, if you have like a heavy use as a hostel, it is not really.
You could replace it in 3 months, right?
You know, but I was looking at the hostel. I was like, it is IKEA style, but it's done, and I could do that too. I can finish it IKEA style, because again, the constructor and I had a designer in Barcelona. They didn't want to finish IKEA style. No, they did not. So, and I remember I was listening to I think, to a podcast about, you know, positivity and that you sort of manifest. And I was like, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finish it. And I just woke up and I had energy. And we already in Holland, we got some compensation. And I used that compensation as well. And I was just liquidating everything I could. And then...
You rented a truck, you went to IKEA, you put, I don't know.
Went to IKEA, had some secondhand furniture.
Okay. And then you opened when? Help me understand sort of the timeline. You opened Barcelona when?
In April last year.
April of 23.
April 21, yeah.
So it almost took you 3 years to open this place.
Yes. And then with preparation, it took me 4 years.
Wow. Wow. And how big is it?
It is quite small. I'm going to tell you just like a revelation. Barcelona is 78 beds.
Definitely.
But I just wanted to get it done. It's really hard to open a hostel in Barcelona because they had the new rules that they didn't want new hotels or hostels in Barcelona. So they were making it extremely hard to open it. And I was like, I'm going to get it done. In hindsight, it wasn't the best motivation. It was not. If you look at money-wise. But it was like a challenge for me. It's like my pretty project. It's beautiful. It has a gym in it. It has a rooftop. It's gorgeous.
And it's a great location?
It's a great location. It's in Barcelona. So I'm happy I finished it, but I don't think if you would ask me now and I didn't have Barcelona, I don't know if I'll be doing.
Okay. And then for London, similar heartaches or less so?
Oh yeah. Oh okay. Yes. So what happened in London? Oh, I have so many stories. So what happened in London? So I was busy with I think a year in London when COVID hit. And I was busy getting my permit. COVID hit, and I was dealing with Barcelona. And so when I was asking for money for Barcelona, I was like, hey, I have my permit for London as well. And I still to this day don't understand why you have investors that are given the opportunity to invest in a hotel in Barcelona or London, and they say no. really. Okay. So, so nobody wanted the two. So, when I was finishing Barcelona IKEA style, I did not have money to start London. I really wanted to do London. And then I was just recently divorced. I had my house. I lived in my house for 18 years in Amsterdam. And my daughter said, and I was like, oh, the money, I can't get a loan, can't get everything, anything. So then my daughter said, like, Mom, why don't you sell the house? And I was like, because I was divorced, and I was like, oh, baby, she's attached to the house. She's like, I'm not attached to the house. So I sold my house, I think within a day, for a load of money.
Okay, okay.
Load of money. Paid all my bills. And I was looking for a new house, and I got my new house within 4 days. So I had to pack everything, the house that I was living in for 18 years, pack it up, move to a smaller house, and I got the money to start London.
Wow. And yeah. that took how long to open?
Let's see. I started London was a headache as well with the constructor. I think from April 2022 to February 2023.
Okay.
So like 9 months or something.
Okay. So that
it
was...
It could be way faster.
But it was relatively fast. I mean, you compare it to Barcelona, for instance, right? Like,
yes.
That
yeah.
cash.
But COVID was in between Barcelona, so...
Yeah. So now you have three more destinations that you're thinking of. One is Paris, one is Berlin, and one is New York.
I don't know if I'd want to do Berlin anymore. I don't think so.
Okay,
you
how
know
come?
What, you know what the thing is as well? The age thing is also a thing. I'm 52. I had a lot of energy. A lot. You have to have energy. And I did everything alone. So, and now I don't have a team. So I'm doing like everything alone, and also, you know, having to as my role as a CEO with the other managers. So I'm their mentor as well. When I have a project, I really have to close everything off. So that's why I said to you, it's like, I'm thinking about my role as a CEO, but also all the hardships and all the battles that you are facing. I don't know if I want to do that many times again. Because I, you know, you're getting older, and it's at one point you go like, you know, when am I going to enjoy the fruits of my labor if I'm constantly in a battle? Like constantly. I mean, it's really, I'm enjoying this. I'm really enjoying it, because I can't say a lot about Paris, but Paris is coming next year, probably. Paris is coming. So I love Paris. Paris is my favorite city. And New York is a big project, a big project. So before COVID hit, I was in New York, February 2020, and I figured everything out. And I was talking to a lawyer there, and he said, you are spot on. You are ready to go. And then COVID hit. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to leave New York. But New York is gonna have a lot of energy for me as well. And then when you are approaching 60, you're going to go like, nah, Alan. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
So maybe it is that you, I mean, it sounds like you have a passion for opening new properties, right? Like
it is, the funny thing is, so I started like, oh, I want to have a hostel, but now I'm more for the developer.
Yeah.
I'm a developer. I strip buildings, like completely strip them, and then build them exactly how I want it. And I really love construction. I'm one of the few women that really love construction. I'm always, you know, in dust and dirt and, you know, with pipes and electricity and plumbing.
Yeah.
So I'm more in that phase and not in the
managing of a hospital. The running,
managing. I love to, you know, let other people do that. They can do that far more better than I can.
So maybe for Amsterdam, you need a CEO that runs your business versus a general manager.
Well, it's not only for Amsterdam. It's okay. It's for the whole...
For the whole group. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm looking at solutions, but I one of the advantages of what I do is that I'm a, like of a mentor for my managers. They're all young women around 25, 26, and they're doing an awesome job.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my youngest manager is in London. She was 23 when I hired her, and she's doing London. And in London, I have 132 beds.
That's fantastic.
Fresh out of school, and she's rocking it, like for real.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so that's super awesome. And the one in Barcelona, Noor, she just sent me a message like, oh, I love working for you. I love that you mentor me, and I love the opportunity. And she came from school too. So I love that part of my job as well. But I do realize that I have to make choices at one point.
Yeah. And you want to enjoy the fruits of your labor at some point.
Of course. I want to be on a yacht.
Okay. So now we know.
You know?
Where is the yacht located? That's the next question. So where is that yacht?
That's a good one.
Where is that yacht going to be anchored?
That is a good one. You know what I miss? What I miss now is that because I'm always traveling to Barcelona, London, and I'm in Amsterdam, and I have a daughter here as well.
Yeah.
So I don't get a lot of opportunity to go to travel outside of these cities.
With it?
And I really want to do that more.
Okay.
Be it without feeling guilty, because every time I talk to my manager, it's like, when are you coming back to London? When are you coming back to Barcelona?
Yeah.
Because and they want to see me, and I want to see them as well. But I really have to juggle like everything, and it's kind of a challenge.
Okay. Yeah. Look, what I'm more very interested in talking to you is about you. You are a hostel owner before the pandemic, and of course have now expanded your portfolio since the pandemic finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm very curious on your opinion whether travel has changed, and if so, what has changed, right? You like before and after. Has there been lots of changes from your perspective?
The change that I really notice is we are doing far more to create a community. We're doing a lot of events. Usually the people really miss being with each other. That's why they choose a hostel.
Okay.
They want to be with other people. They want to meet other people. And especially I'm being a female-only hostel.
Mm-hmm.
We really want to have that community of female travelers that are just, you know, communicating with each other, doing nice things with each other. So we are doing a lot of effort to, you know, create a community and to do events. So you see that people are really like searching for connection right now.
More so than before?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So they're starved for social contact, right? They've been at home, stuck at home for some time, and...
Absolutely.
They're traveling to connect with other people.
Absolutely. And you see the rise as well. I think you guys see it as well. You see a lot of hybrid...
Mm-hmm. Hostels,
concepts coming up, like hotel hostels.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the hotels, they realize that they are missing that community part. And they are missing a lot of young travelers because they don't have that community part.
Yeah.
And they don't have that young vibe or that, you know, we were talking about interior design, something that attracts young people when they are traveling. And they are looking for not only a bed or a room, but also more like a connection, but also inspiration. Or extra things that, you know, you just want to be outside of your own living space and be in a beautiful and different environment with other people.
So maybe 10 years ago, right, the sense of community was maybe a co-working space, right? It was maybe a coffee where there was free Wi-Fi. You would have 10, 15 people sitting across there. mobile devices and laptops and pretend to be social, but they're not social, right? They're not interacting with each other. They're just sitting together. How do you create today a community now? What type of events are you doing, right, that allows people to connect, not through a phone, but in real life?
Mm-hmm. We are doing a lot of, we have in each of the branches, we have like volunteers that stay and they do events for us. And it could vary from, we have movie nights, we have bike rides in Amsterdam. We just, it's interesting. I just said to the managers, I want each of you guys to have a special week of your country where you're in. So we had Spanish week, we had Dutch week, and we have British week. And Spanish week, we had tapas, we had like a Spanish movie of Pedro Almodovar. We had, I think, some flamingo dancing thing going on. In Amsterdam, we had a Dutch breakfast, we had a bike ride, we had, I think, a Dutch meal as well. And in London, we had high tea, we had fish and chips. So we are, I said to the managers as well, like, you're in the, people travel to you to get some of the local flavor. So offer that in a setting with other people. So those kind of things, you know, that's really, yeah, it's really connecting. And I was in London and they had, we had a girls' dinner, right? Girls' dinner. Do you know the term?
No, what's that?
Oh, girls' dinner.
I'm sorry.
Girls' dinner. You're not a girl. So basically, when you have girls' dinner, is you can eat whatever you like at that moment. If you want to eat 3 peanuts, 1 banana, 3 cookies, 1 potato, that's girls' dinner.
Okay.
So what we do, we do, we put everything on the table, you can just mix and match. So we had girls dinner.
Okay.
And they were sitting, I think they were sitting from 7 o'clock until midnight. It's just a group of girls chatting and talking about all kinds of different things. It looked like a podcast for real.
That's hilarious.
It's really, and we had Thanksgiving. There was a really long table and we had chicken and all kinds of Thanksgiving things. And everybody has to say, you know, when what they were thankful for. And we have a Christmas dinner coming on. We had a big Halloween celebration and girls love to decorate. So every time it's decoration. So, yeah, the decoration, it does the trick. So yeah. We had a big Halloween party. Yeah. Absolutely. With Halloween as well, because I have a management meeting every Monday. And I said, guys, Halloween is coming on. I want everybody to have decoration and everybody to have a schedule on that day or that week, what you're going to do. So it was a scary movie. It was like drinks and like beer pong with eyeballs and, you know, and they had like painting. And one of the volunteers was reading tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, and I leave it also up to the imagination of the manager and the volunteers to come up with original things in the branch.
That's so fantastic. I was talking to a couple of other hostel owners who were telling me that their guests have become older and it's driving some of like their average age, right? They see fewer very young travelers or younger travelers, but they see sort of the average age increase. True or false? I guess there's an observation that you're seeing as well.
Generally, no. I do have a couple of older women, and especially when you get, what you get is when it gets cheaper, the price gets cheaper, you get more local people that are looking for houses, that are maybe homeless, or they have a difficult situation. And they tend to be a little bit older. So I did have a couple, but it's not increasing. I don't have the feeling that it's increasing.
You know, we talked about Booking.com earlier about an OTA, for instance, right? And that's also in a way technology.
Yeah.
If you think of, you know, technology that you use today, but also that is in use by travel, what changes in technology are you noticing? from a distribution, from, you know, how the new guests are traveling or expecting potentially technology, like what changes do you see happening?
I do not see a lot of change. The only change I really see, and I'm really implementing as one of the few hostels, because we're really big on social media as well, we are doing a lot of TikTok.
Okay.
We are doing a lot of TikTok. I mean, check our TikTok account. And TikTok requires knowledge. It is, I'm 52. I follow TikTok, but to make TikToks,
When you say knowledge, what do you mean? Like, what do I need to know as a content creator?
As a content, TikTok, it's just mini movies.
Okay.
You have to have actors, you have to have a script, you have to have a sound, you have to have editing.
Music.
You have to have a viral, a sense of viral sounds and viral, you know, concepts. And you have to be right on time.
So who creates your content?
My girls do. So I'm all, my staff, so my staff is young. So all of my managers are young.
Yeah.
So, and the volunteers are also young. So the volunteers, they get also for all the events that we do the social media with it too.
Mm-hmm.
So they create, like we had a Halloween kind of, we do reels, but we also do TikToks. And we had a TikTok that went viral and that had 1.1 million views.
That's amazing.
1.1. We went viral. Yeah. Like, how did we do that?
That is amazing. Now I have to find, look for your TikTok and then find it.
Look, and I'm going to tell you, I even have 3 TikTok accounts. So Barcelona, London, and I don't even have one, I have 3.
So what's the impact? Is it just views, or do you see a noticeable impact to your business? Like, you create all this content, right? And as a potential new hostel owner, right, or somebody starting in the industry, what does it do for me? I create all this content. Does it change your business performance? Does it actually create more guests? Like, what happened when things went viral for you from a business perspective?
You know what it is, and that's the hardest thing about social media.
Yeah,
you don't see a one-on-one kind of effect.
Sure.
And with us as well. I mean, I'm a female only hustle. I'm the only one in Barcelona. I'm the only one in Amsterdam or in Holland. I'm not the only one in London, but I'm the biggest one in London. But still, the concept is not like really known. So the first step of your marketing is they have to know you first. They have to know you, and then they have to have a good feeling about you, and then they can book with you. And what a lot of people, a lot of companies think, like, oh, I did like a TikTok and now they have to book me. Like, no, I don't even know who you are. Like, I see one TikTok. If I see one TikTok, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, a female hustle. Let me see what they have on their Instagram. Let me see how expensive it is, or where it is exactly, you know, because you can go like, oh, this is a nice TikTok, but it's not in a location where I want to be. So it is more factors than only the TikTok, but the TikTok is a start.
It's a start.
It's like Tinder. You really have to have a profile photo first and then you go talk to me.
It's
like a match.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Fast forward, your social media is super important. Fast forward, do you think, I don't know, virtual reality and all of these things will be relevant for future guests? Like, what?
No.
Do you care for AI at this point?
You know, AI is only interesting if, let's say, we use templates to ask questions, or to, answer some kind of questions. That's a form of AI. I mean, what I thought was going to happen was that the self-check-in, I mean, we were talking about that for years. Self-check-in, it's going to be hard. It never happened.
Why not?
It just never happened.
Why not?
Because, you know what it is? You have a lot of forms of payments.
Yeah.
So not everybody is paying in front.
Yeah.
So if not everybody's doing that, you still have people that have to pay on arrival.
Yeah.
So you can do the self-check-in, but you still have to pay with somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And a lot of people, especially with hostels, they come, they have questions, or they don't understand something, or something goes wrong. Or, you know, they want, what we get a lot at the hostel is that people want to know, where can I go, or where can I get some food? Or so you cannot eliminate.
Almost else they want to have, they want to have a conversation with you as well, right? They want
Okay. People, sometimes you forget that people want to have contact. Not all. I mean, I can imagine if you're on a business trip. And you're just going for a conference and you're like, I don't want to see anybody. You just want to get into my bed and go to the conference in the morning. That is fine. But if you're traveling with your little backpack and you're doing a week of Amsterdam and you want to connect with other people, a self-check-in, it has no point. And it has no point if one half self-check-ins and the other half doesn't. You still have to have a person there.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of hotels will be like, you know what? Nah.
I still have to have person at the front desk.
You still have to have that person there. You cannot go. I mean, I think some hotels tried it. I don't know if they're still doing it. But I think a lot of, because if something goes wrong and you are in the self check-in and you come there and your key doesn't work, what are you going to do?
How many
times have you been in a hotel and your key doesn't work and you have to go downstairs, the key doesn't work. And they go and they type it in again and you have to go upstairs. And the next day, the key still doesn't work. You know, I've heard that so many times. So many times.
Or
something in the bathroom doesn't work, or you don't have shampoo or anything. You have to ask somebody.
Look, before we close, I want to dive into your experience, and I want to sort of take the three things. I'm thinking of all the hostel owners or the aspiring hostel owners that want to open their own hostel anywhere in the world. And I'd love for you to share one or two things that you recommend they should do and one of the things they should avoid doing, right? Because you're a serial entrepreneur, right? You're a serial developer, if you will. You know what you're doing. And so I kind of want to share both the best practices and the things to avoid doing because they may, you know, make you fail or they may cause significant delays, whichever it is, right? So for us to start on or end on a positive note, let's start about the things you should avoid when you're getting getting into hostels.
You should avoid listening to a lot of people that say that it's not possible.
Okay.
It can be a killer because people don't understand. They are like, oh, it's not possible. Yes, it is. And I think what you should avoid, a negative mindset. If you have a positive mindset and you are you do your due diligence, then you can get really, really far. But you should really avoid people that bring you down in their negative, like, because they're going to say it's not possible. It's not possible for them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are the things you should do? What are the things that you
should do? Research. I'm really good in due diligence.
Okay.
You should know everything about the hostel business. You should Google this out of everything.
That.
You should know what permits you have to use, what kind of business you need, how much money you need. And if you don't have the knowledge, you should find it somewhere. So if you're not good at numbers, find somebody that can crack the numbers with you. You know, if you're not good at permits, get somebody from the city and talk to them what you need exactly, but you should really know where what you need to do to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you should just follow all the steps, because if you look at the end of the road, it looks like a lot, But if you just look at the first step and do that, and then you do the next step, and then you do that, and then because you forget how many hard steps there were, I forgot about it in Barcelona, but they were a lot. Because if you see the end, you're not going to do it. Just go like, yeah, you can do it. You can do it. The first step is easy. It's okay. So that. And if you can, I would advise you not to get an investor.
Okay. Okay.
Not.
So do it yourself. Spend your own money.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Last question that I have for you is if you could take out your magic wand and change anything on, you know, your hostel group right now, what would it be?
Change anything. I don't know. Things went the way they're supposed to be going. I have the most amazing female crew, like for real. I love these women. They are amazing, and they have so much talent. And for women, it's really harder to get the talent out because we are not, in general, that confident in what we can do. So if you just give them the opportunity, they will go. So I really enjoy that. And I at this moment, it's good.
Do your mic drop. That's it. That's okay. That's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine.
Thank you.
Bianca, thank you so much for joining us on The Turndown. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing your stories, your experience.
It was a pleasure.
Good luck in Paris. And
thank you
look
so
forward
much.
Checking in with you in due course.
We will be calling CloudBets Paris
right.
to connect us.
Thank you for listening to The Turndown. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in next week as we discover new exciting guests.